Boston. Good evening, Internet. We are broadcasting live on WRKO AM 680, The Talk of Boston. We are on Facebook Live. We are everywhere on the Internet at www.wrko.com. Live stream is available. And we are here tonight to talk about a bunch of different things. But the number one thing that I want to talk about right now, the very first thing, is to tell you that in less than 30 minutes, we are going to be on the air with Larry Sharp, the gubernatorial candidate in New York. He is among the most popular of all the liberty figures in the country right now. And we're lucky to have him on the show. So I hope that people are getting their questions ready for him. But as we're building up to that, and if you are a Larry Sharp fan or you know people, you should be on Facebook sharing this. But as we're building up to that, I want to talk about something that's of interest to people here in Boston especially, which is the tax plan. So, you know, the Senate passed a tax plan. They did not pass the House plan. And that's an important thing because this tax plan that they passed has to be reconciled with the House plan. So what is passed is not law yet. And it's not law, and that's a big deal because there's still a possibility that there might be no reconciliation because there are some things in the House plan that people are not happy about. There are some things in the Senate plan that members of the House are not happy about. In particular, in the House, they put all sorts of adjustments in, sort of, they're pro-life amendments. They're not restrictions, direct restrictions on abortion, but they're things that people who are pro-choice are against. And I think that that's going to be a hindrance for Lisa Murkowski and Olivia Snowe from Maine, who are two Republicans who ended up being yes. They passed with 51 votes in the Senate, which means they've got technically one vote to lose. But now what happens is that the Senate team and the House team get together. They essentially work on the compromise bill, and then everybody is going to be able to vote on it afterwards.
Hmm.
Now, there's a couple things in here that affect us directly, and I neglected to mention, I'm joined in the studio today by Matt McLaughlin and Heather Mullins, mm-hmm. Ken Van Tassel, sadly absent, but playing a nice gig out in Milford right now. So if you happen to buy the Turtle Tavern in Milford, maybe finish listening to the show, but Ken will be playing out there till 1, so stop on in. Buy him a drink, too. Guy deserves it. So let's go over the highlights of the tax plan. Okay, the number one thing mm-hmm. is that it is an immediate tax cut for almost everybody. Almost everybody's taxes go down. However, if everybody's taxes are going down and spending is not going down,
where's the money coming from?
Well, what does that mean for the deficit? Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, I think I know the answer to this.
Yeah? What do you think, Matt?
The deficit goes up.
The deficit does indeed go up. It's projected to go up by $1 trillion based on neutral estimates, based on Pollyanna estimates issued by Steve Mnuchin. Later on in the show, I'm going to call up Steve Mnuchin's IMDb page so we can talk about the films that he's produced because I think that gives us an idea of what kind of treasury he's going to be. So the deficit's going to go up by at least $1 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
And
over how long?
Over, I believe, the next 7 years. And so there's a lot of the tax cuts are palatable now, but they fade out. And let me ask you this. If you had to be reelected to office, when would you make the tax cuts fade out? Right after the next election. So, yes, that's when the tax cuts fade out. So everybody is essentially in the middle class. The tax cuts fade away. However, if you are one of the 2,000 families in the United States whose estate is so large that you would be covered by the estate tax, good news. The estate tax is essentially repealed. So if you're
Is that permanent?
That is permanent.
Oh, okay.
So if you're one of the
wealthiest, there's no rush for those 2,000 people to die.
There's no rush for those 2,000 people. Exactly right. At this point in time, right, they can hang on. They have to hang on until it gets passed.
Oh, okay.
So,
good
I
point.
Mean, I'm sure that
good
there's
point.
A lot of, you know, like the Waltons, they're pretty old. They own, a large
Walton
portion.
Mountain?
Not Walton Mountain. That is
John Boy. Oh, you're
John
talking
Boy.
About the other Walton.
The Waltons.
The non-fictional ones.
Own Walmart or whatever.
Yes, but Matt's
Walton.
Referencing the old Waltons TV show, which yes. is a classic.
It was before my time.
It was actually before, it wasn't quite before my time, but... it was certainly before electricity. Anyway.
So when you say they fade out, so these tax cuts that they just passed aren't going to start until when?
They probably will start not next year, but the year afterwards.
Okay, so like 2019?
Yeah, essentially they will apply for your 2018 taxes, which you fill out in 2019.
And so in 2019 then, we're eliminating?
No, 2019 you'll see a little tax break. I will see, just a rough thing, I will see more of a tax break. However, there are certain things about it that they did get rid of. So they got rid of a lot of deductions. That's a big deal for people who want to start small businesses. So, for example, I have this dream that someday I might make a little money on this radio show. It's not happening because we currently have no sponsors. And sponsors, if you're listening in, this show is a bargain. We reach, we are the largest Liberty broadcast in Boston by a mile on WRKO, which has a reach from Portland to Providence. Enormous range. You can sponsor the shows for $500 an episode. I just thought I'd throw that out there. But right now, that $500 an episode comes out of my wallet. And that's a business expense.
Yep.
If I were to ever profit on this radio show, the government would expect me to pay taxes on that profit, which means that any business expenses that I have are a legitimate deduction.
Yeah.
This year. They're rolling away all business deductions.
All of them?
Almost all of them. Wait. Now, there's a difference between whether or not you're a corporation. Corporations will still have deductions, but small business owners will have almost no deductions.
But are they also lowering the tax on businesses?
So the corporate tax rate goes away, and they are lowering the tax rate on what's called a pass-through rate. So when I earn money as a small business and I have the money go straight into my pocket, I pay essentially as if it were income.
Yes.
However, I would pay it at my income rate. So let's say that this job were my only business and I made $100,000 at it. I would pay taxes as if I'd earned $100,000. Part of what they did is that they increased the deduction for the pass-through rate from 17%, now it's up to 23%. But you lose all your deductions.
What is the argument in doing this and removing these deductions for businesses? What was the argument made by Congress to have this passed?
You're definitely simplifying taxes. Now you don't have to go through and say,
right,
I bought a laptop, I bought,
right,
lunch every day.
That's exactly
I use this in commuting, and then you don't have to itemize your deductions,
right,
which is saving you time, energy,
right,
and money.
And they actually doubled the personal deduction. So what you used to be able to deduct, and chances are pretty good that you used the blanket personal deduction before. The only time you would get into itemizing is if you had a lot of expenses or if you owned a house. Because if you owned a house, you get to deduct the interest from your mortgage. And for people who just bought a new house, that's an enormous amount of money. It's $25,000, $30,000 every year. That's a big deal to take off your taxes. That is also going away. So the mortgage deduction is going to go away, although it's not going away 100%.
So do you think this is going to have an overall positive or negative effect on the economy, or does it depend on the economy per state?
So I'm probably sounding pretty negative about it. Let me talk about the things that I do think that are awesome about it.
Okay.
It cuts the corporate tax rate from 39% to 20%. And that's great. That is great for America.
Growth,
that is great for American businesses.
Economic growth.
Well, because essentially what happens is that businesses now have more money. And, what's going to happen if a business has more money? They're going to pay their employees more. They might invest in their company themselves. And they have the opportunity to hire more employees. All of those things are good for America.
Mm-hmm. Or they might even just stay in the country.
They might even stay in the country. Right, exactly. So Apple, I believe, has...
they're leaving Ireland, or they're trying to.
They have $300 billion in cash. Of which $280 billion of it, and my numbers are close, but they're not perfect. $280 of it is in Ireland right now.
Which they think they're moving out of it.
Because
Ireland is trying to raise their tax rate a little bit.
Right. But Ireland's tax rate is 12%. So even when we get down to 20,
compared to ours today?
39.
39?
Ours is 39 right now. Okay. Which is, now there's a little bit of, to say that it's 39% of your profits, that's not completely true, because you get to deduct salaries from your income tax, from your corporate income tax. So if let's go back to my hypothetical, and I'm making $100,000 on the radio show, and I'm paying each of you $20,000, I don't have to pay taxes on that $20,000.
So I'm kind of curious then now, because I know Amazon, right, was talking about opening up that H2Q.
Yep. Still going
HQ2,
on.
HQ2, whatever it is.
It's almost certainly a done deal at the at Suffolk Downs.
Where's that? What do you mean where?
In Revere, in Massachusetts.
They're going to pick Massachusetts over New Hampshire?
Yeah. I mean, probably.
You or think
New York?
So?
Yeah.
I don't know. Governor Sununu made a pretty, like, pretty crazy bid there.
No, I saw it. It was very nice. The problem with it is there's just no engineers in New Hampshire.
Okay, but it would draw them there.
No.
Yeah, but, well, because his idea was that he'd give them an exit right off 93 so they could beeline it straight to Boston. So it'd have easy access to Boston, short commute. You'd have the lower tax burden.
There's something to that. Suffolk Downs has its own subway stop now.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to change anything. Don't get me wrong. I would love to see it go to Derry is where they're talking about putting it in New Hampshire. Or Londonderry.
I worry about it. I mean,
I think they're the same thing.
Boston's already so congested.
I prefer
the subway's already had so many problems. Like, this is the whole reason they didn't bring the Olympics here. Now they're talking about putting an Amazon headquarters.
Yep.
Like, that's nuts.
Well, there is a big difference with the Amazon headquarters. Is that's not, hopefully it's not temporary. It's not for 6 weeks. And it's not like Amazon is coming in here,
yeah,
making us build it
jobs.
And then
right.
leaving it to rot
right.
like the Olympics would have.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And Amazon is, you know, only 50,000 employees. If the Olympics only had 50,000 people come, that would be a failure of an Olympics.
Yeah. True.
So and it's honestly pointed out that, you know, the population of Boston drops by about 250,000 every summer. So Boston is used to dealing with changes in capacity back and forth.
But what I've noticed.
Yeah, I would love to see it go to New Hampshire, not to mention the fact that you could tell the engineers that they're going to get a 6% raise to go there.
Yeah.
But the problem with having it go to New Hampshire in the long run is that you just don't have access to the great engineers that are available in the Boston area. That's why all the startups are here. A couple more things about the federal tax plan. And these were the ones – so I talked about the good thing. I think I'm glad the corporate rate's going down. However, here's some of the things that are really disappointing that happened. Number one, they passed the bill without any support from any Democrats. Now – I know that no Democrats were going to do it, but I complained beforehand. I said that I think that you should, if you are the party of opposition, on principle, always repeal anything that was passed without your support. So the Republicans should have repealed the ACA. They didn't have the cojones to do it, but that's their problem. The Democrats should say, we are 100% rolling all of this back as soon as we get in charge. Because if they do that, then Apple's not moving out of Ireland. They're like, well, we're not sure that, you know, the Republicans are still going to be in charge.
But that's still no guarantee that they could. Because what happens if it's in place for a few years and all of a sudden the people are like, hey, you know what? I like not paying – like I like paying 20% on my income as a small business and not having to itemize everything. My taxes don't take me 6 weeks to do. I can do them in an afternoon.
There's no question. There are some benefits to this. It's going to increase the deficit. They could get rid of spending. All of those things are benefits, but the biggest thing about it too is that for people in Massachusetts, it's going to make a big difference because they can't deduct their state and local income taxes. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, when we get back from the break, we're going to talk to somebody who lives in Massachusetts. And we are back. We are talking about the hot political topic of the day, the new tax plan passed by the Senate. WRKO AM 680, the talk of Boston, the voice of Boston. 617-266-6868. And we have Skippy on the line. Skippy, what do you think about the fact you're not going to be able to deduct your Massachusetts taxes from the federal taxes anymore?
Well, Dan and dear guest, it's kind of been unfair. We live in the blue states that the other states, some of the red states who are so well up, they've been subsidizing us for a long time. And also, they've been paying that extra $2,400 a year for the longest time. So
yeah.
We're squawking about we're going to inherit that, but people don't get what we have. We have the greatest hospitals and schools and everything else. They've been taking care of us. We've been riding on their backs.
I never even thought about it. Like, that's 100% right, because all the time you see these stats saying, oh, the red states take so much money from the federal government, but they're paying more to the federal government. I never even realized that per capita, people in Massachusetts, because they've been deducting their state income tax, are spending less, sending less to the federal government than people in New Hampshire.
That's correct. And, sir, and you said, and yourself and the guests at the opening, you said how this tax, even though it's going to be the biggest tax refund whenever, since however, since even before Reagan, what have you, but it's going to add to the deficit.
Yep.
Just think of it this way, and this is the way I look at it. These companies that have all fled this our country from various, not just for the taxes, but the unions played a big part in that too. With their unreasonable, some of them, not all, some of their unreasonable expectations. So, but they come back. So let's say, for instance, a big company comes in and we'll just say they make whatever widgets. They open a plant. It isn't just that plant. All these mom and pop little stores, it branches out to supply companies. There's going to be more people working, so therefore less people on the welfare rolls. That's got to cut into the deficit.
Yep.
It's not
going
to go away right away. 20 years from now, we'll start seeing a plus.
Right. Well, I appreciate what you're saying, Skippy. That's absolutely, those are two excellent points. Yeah, the first one, you know, about the fact, I'd never even thought about the fact that the red states are actually subsidizing all these great things that have happened in the blue states because the
you
blue
think
states,
so?
it's 100% true. I mean, that's just simple math. The fact that Massachusetts has a state income tax, they use it to pay for things in Massachusetts. Okay. That means that they're not spending that money to the federal government. So people in Massachusetts send less money to the federal government, which if we talk about it in terms of supporting the armed forces, clearly, right, that's a federal function. People who live in blue states send less money to the government to pay for the armed forces.
Is that's
because then there's also like matching for federal grants and stuff like that. I know like there's a lot of different departments in Massachusetts that they tax people in Massachusetts and then use that money to match for federal grants.
Well, but when that happens, every time there's a tax in Massachusetts that a person in the Commonwealth pays, they get to deduct that from their federal income tax. So they are not paying what would show. If I make $100,000 and I live in New Hampshire, right, I'm going to send, let's just say that my rate is 30%. I'm going to send 30%, so $30,000 to Washington. But if I live in Massachusetts and I make $100,000, I pay 6% income tax. So I spend send $6,000 to the state of Massachusetts. And then I only pay 30% on $94,000. So I end up spending $27,000. So I sent less money to Washington than somebody who lives in New Hampshire. Now, I mean, overall taxes.
I wonder for every dollar we send to Washington, how much we get back.
Sadly, the number is we get back about $1.25 right now.
Now, who's we? Is we the state of Massachusetts?
No, we is the every citizen of the United States.
Generally.
No, yeah. But I'm saying like by state, if you were to look at it and see how many, like which states paid more into the federal government and got back more than what they paid in versus states that paid a dollar and got back 75 cents. You know what I mean?
Right. I mean, technically speaking, when we talk about the federal level of spending,
yeah,
okay, I'm looking at it a global thing. Certain states get more, certain states get less. Generally, when you see charts about it, people will complain that the red states are getting more than their fair share. But now that I think about the fact that the red states have been paying more, I'm less upset about that number. One of the other interesting things about this, Skippy's second point, and this is sort of the Republican point, is that if all this money gets repatriated, okay, and the corporate tax rate is lowered, companies could be expanding in the United States. I mean, if you take the amount of cash that Facebook, Apple, Microsoft, and Google have on hand, it's almost enough to eliminate the deficit this year. It's almost $1 trillion, which is pretty amazing. So putting that money, investing that money in America, because what's it doing right now? It's just sitting overseas, not doing anything, because the tax rate is so high that it actually hurts them to bring it back. Mm-hmm. If they were to bring that back, if they were to spend it here, that would make a difference. It would put more people back to work. When we do all that stuff, that's probably the scenario that we want to see. When we come back, we have our superstar guest, Larry Sharp, running for governor in New York, one of the clarion voices of liberty right now in the United States. We're going to talk to him. We've got some questions lined up. We want to hear from the callers. Our number is 617-266-6868, or you can text us at 680-680. Queue up those questions, and we're looking forward to hearing from you. Welcome back. Liberty on the air. WRKO AM 680, the voice of Boston, the largest Liberty show in the Boston area. And we are bringing the Liberty to you because we have on a special guest, Larry Sharp, one of the clarion voices of Liberty in the United States right now, and a candidate for governor of New York. Larry, welcome to Liberty on the air.
Dan, brother, how are you? It's good to have you.
I am so happy to hear you. Thank you so much for calling in. So for Absolutely. For our listeners who may not be familiar with you, can you tell us a little bit of the Larry Sharp story? Are you a native New Yorker?
Oh, my God. This is a boring story. No, I'm kidding. yes, I'm born and raised in New York City. Absolutely. Born in Manhattan, raised in Manhattan and the Bronx and also Long Island. Spent 7 years in the Marine Corps, several years overseas teaching English. Came back, opened up a couple businesses, live in Queens now, did some sales jobs, have my own business now for about 13 years.
So
ran as a for the VP last year and now running for governor this year. That was pretty fast, wasn't it?
That was fast. It was perfect. It raises an obvious question. It seems like you're actually very qualified for the job of governor.
Oh, I like that. Yes. Let's hope about 1.5 million New Yorkers agree with you.
Well, so the problem is that New Yorkers really don't have much of a track record of voting for a qualified candidate. How are you going to make them understand that that works for them?
No, Americans don't. And here's the most important thing is it doesn't matter. Americans, look, voting is not about qualification at all. We know that from 2016, right?
Right.
I mean, nothing to do with that. People don't vote on what is true. They vote on what they feel is true. Not even what they think is true. What they feel is true. It's a popularity contest. People bother me all the time and say, Larry, you have to be able to, you know, win better arguments and debate better. And I say, no, I don't. I have to win hearts and minds. So that matters.
So that's a fascinating question because I think hearts and minds, you know, we have so many issues that are in the news right now that deal sort of directly with hearts and minds. And I think Heather had a question that goes directly to that. So, Heather, you want to...
Lovely Heather, how are you?
Hi, Larry. Long time no talk. How have
you
been?
Yeah, it's been a while.
So I have to ask a question. There has been a lot of talk in the news. As you know, I also co-host Free Talk Live, so we've talked about this a few times. So with this recent wave of revelations of like sexual harassment and sexual abuse and that type of stuff, do you think that's one part of the libertarian movement? And as a follow-up, how is a libertarian administration more prepared to deal with these types of, you know, misconduct in Albany as opposed to a Republican or a Democrat?
Harassment is not a libertarian issue at all. Harassment is a cultural issue.
Agreed.
Right? It affects everything. If anything, and I don't know if this is in practice, but in theory, the libertarian movement should have less sexual harassment and abuse.
I think that was her point, is that the libertarian movement is actually sponsoring people waking up and standing up against this.
Yes. I mean, our tenets are transparency and consent, right? I mean, that's two of our tenets.
Exactly.
So when you have those two ideas of transparency and consent, and assuming you follow those, you know, sexual harassment becomes, you know, minimized because you're trying to have transparency and you're against anything that's non-consensual. And if it is consensual, it is not harassment by default, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. 100%.
Absolutely.
And
yeah,
New York,
so I think if you have that in a administration, there are a couple things. Number one, being a libertarian, if I were to say something like, I want to have a girlfriend outside of my marriage, or I want to fool around and do something that might seem lewd in certain circles, most libertarians would say, as long as you're open about it and there are consenting adults, who cares? Once that happens, and that theoretically again, well, then guess what? I don't have to hide anything, and therefore there's no requirement for harassment.
Now, here's something that I actually got into a conversation with the other day about that, though. I'll just plug it real quick. Do you think standards are still necessary, even though, like, because I know I hear in libertarian circles all the time, oh, if it's two consenting adults, well, two consenting adults could, you know, have open and lewd behavior in the middle of a mall. It doesn't necessarily make it the right thing to
Absolutely.
Do. So how do
no.
we draw
Again,
that
remember,
line between standards and consent?
Yeah, there's also a difference between standards and regulations and law, right? So yep. I don't have a problem with standards, but I do have a problem with law and regulation. For example, you might say having sex on the job is against, you know, the law, against regulations. No, it isn't. It's against standards. Why do I say that? Because say, for example, you work in the porn industry or you work in the prostitution industry. Well, great. Sex on the job is part of the job.
Yep.
So it's your own standard. If I'm running a legal brothel in Nevada, who cares? I'm running a bank in New York. No sex in public. Thank you very much.
I think that's that's a perfect answer.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. It depends upon where you are. Absolutely.
So, Larry, I wanted to sort of to pivot out of that for a second and just ask you sort of an education-based question. Sure. My brother's a teacher. He teaches at a public school. And one of the things that, you know, when I look at it, I went to a public school and went to college.
Sure did I.
But when I, you know, when I see now what's going on with, you know, we seem to be making every kid need to go to college. Every kid has to go. And then every kid gets more and more into debt, which goes back to banks and then the government and stuff like that. And we've seemed to move away from trades, which is something that, that, you know, you can't export a plumbing job, right? You know, you can't, you can't call up a tech support line and have them, you know, in India and have them fix your plumbing. At least until Amazon or Google makes everything digital. So, do you have sort of a position or a thought on that? Like there are, you know, there are some kids that, you know, are sort of moved more into trades, than others. And do you think it's a good thing to just that everyone should go to college? The sort of philosophy we've had for the past 30 years.
Well, we have an issue. And the issue is that, look, if we go to college, that means you have more valuable skills, and that means that you'll get higher-paying jobs and so on, so on, so on, so. That is absolutely not true. People believe it because it used to be true. The reason why your skill is valuable is not because you spent a lot of time learning it. No one cares how much time you spent learning your skill. The reason why your skill is valuable is because it is scarce.
On the market.
Scarcity is what makes your skill valuable. If everyone goes to college, college is not valuable. Plumbers right now often make more money than college graduates. Why? There are less plumbers than college graduates. And more people need plumbers than they need college graduates. You can pick a college graduate off a tree. How many people do you know who are college graduates who are underemployed? I know dozens of them personally. There must be tens of thousands throughout the country.
I know one college very well.
Yes. So my point being, while college is not a bad thing, I'm not anti-college. If you want to go to college, that's awesome.
No, I agree with that, yeah.
We've decided that it's the answer. It is not the answer. The answer is people finding their way, their own way. And here's the next piece on top of that.
Yeah.
We assume that college is just for high school kids. No. If you go to college today, there's lots of 40, 50, 60-year-olds going to college. Education nowadays is continual. The idea that you can go to high school, then go to college and have your career for 40 years is a fantasy. That fantasy has been gone for decades, but we still think it's true. You're going to have to keep learning. Most people are going to have at least four careers in their life. Mm-hmm. Not four jobs, four careers.
Right.
Now, do you think
why
that
is college assumed to be right after high school? College and learning should be in any way, shape, or form that people want it to be. We should, in my perfect world, at 16, you have a choice. Go to work, go to school, go to a trade school, go to the military, do something. Get out of your house if you want to. The problem is we have literally millions of kids, 16, 17 years old, and they're sitting in their basement playing video games and smoking weed for the last 2 years of high school because they shouldn't be studying AP chemistry and history. But some kids should be doing that.
Right.
So let's allow those kids to go do that and the others to go become an apprentice at, as you said, using the plumber example.
Or a sanitation worker. It's a formula that's been set out.
Building anything. Who cares? Doing something.
Exactly right. We got Jacob on the line. Jacob's calling in from New York. So potential voter right here.
Love it.
Hey, Jacob, go ahead.
Oh, hey, Larry. How's it doing? How you going? How's it going?
It's going well, brother.
I just wanted to talk to you about Andrew Cuomo. He's getting the news lately. He's getting the hot water. You got the mayor of New York calling him out and saying, this guy doesn't care about New York. He's just trying to run for president. You got the brazenness, the hollowness. He's trying to rename the Tappan Zee Bridge the Mario Cuomo Bridge.
Yep.
And I get that he likes his dad, but the chutzpah in this guy. I mean, what's going on here?
I like my dad, too, but I don't want to name a bridge after him. Unless I build a bridge.
Right.
If I build a bridge, I can name a bridge after my dad. But until that day comes, I don't have to worry about that. You're totally correct. And here's the issue with the current governor. The current governor actually believes that he deserves it. He actually believes that he deserves it.
That he's anointed.
Yes, people tease him and call him King Andrew. I do also, because he does believe he's a monarch. I never forget the argument they had, and this is between him and de Blasio, over how to fix the MTA. They literally were talking about who should pay? Should it come out of Cuomo's pocket or should it come out of de Blasio's pocket? Should Cuomo pay or should de Blasio pay? Here's the problem. It's not their money.
Right. Exactly.
But they believe it is. They right. honestly believe it's their money. I remember when we were at this debate in 2014, and he was asked a question about helping out upstate. And he had just given out the Buffalo Billions. For those of you in New York, you remember there was the Buffalo Billions in New York to help the area outside of Buffalo and the docks. And he said, haven't I given you enough money already? That's his words. Haven't I given you?
Yeah.
See how nice he is to give us our money back? Oh, my God, what a great guy.
The imperial monarchy.
That is correct.
So we have we got a text coming in from Brownsville, which they say is in New York. So they want to know what you think about the effect, what the effect is going to be of this new tax plan, the new federal tax plan that's passed on New Yorkers who are already paying a tremendous amount of state and local income tax.
I think that what is going to happen is exactly what Jacob was talking about. Cuomo is going to will change nothing, ensure we suffer, blame the Republicans, and use that as a way to say he needs to be president to fix this thing. I think he loves the idea. I think he will change nothing. He will make no attempt to fix this at all because this crisis is what he will use to try to become president. He's already picked his team.
Now, what would you do differently? Like, what would your solution be? Like, what would you do as governor in order to make things
better? This would be my opportunity to use the bully pulpit to say, why don't we end the state income tax and that solves our problem?
And it does, because if you end
the problem,
right, if you end the state income tax, then, I mean, it's a benefit to New Yorkers in general, but also it points out the problem that there is this discrepancy that some people who live in different places are sending less to the federal government.
What's the state income tax in New York currently?
Oh, Jesus, I actually don't know. I think is it 8.25?
There's a city tax and there's also
that's
a state
the problem.
Tax.
We have so many different taxes that they're on top of each other. City tax is a separate tax. So I think it's 3/4.
Do you think the solution is adding a tax for every block? Whatever block you live on pays a tax?
I
can go to the plowing and fixing
I think the more confusing you make it, the better. You know, this way, when we target anyone to go to jail, they just go right to jail. So I think clearly I'm joking, guys. I'm joking.
Yeah, no, I'm joking too. Yeah.
We're laughing. Yeah,
no, more taxes.
In my perfect world here, this would be an example and a reason to get out and speak about the most important thing, which is cutting spending. I'm actually not a big fan of tax cuts. I know it sounds crazy for me to say that, but I'm not. Because tax cuts always mean either bigger debt or someone else is paying it. So I actually am more concerned about cutting spending. So if we could, you know, decide, hey, wait a minute, we're going to have to cut our actual state income tax, which means now we're going to have to cut spending. The first thing you do in the first year about this is figure out how you can start to bring up other options to compete with the current services that the government is providing.
Wow.
If you just stop services, if you just do that, people get scared. People get scared. They do bad, dumb things. Remember, the government rarely just takes away our rights. Almost always, we eagerly vote them away because we're afraid.
Yep.
So you don't just want to stop things. You want to say, wait a minute, this is coming down the pike now. Mm-hmm. So what can we do to add other options to bring in that same revenue? And the things I brought about here in New York City, often I talk about the idea of we can't afford the bridges, so why don't we sell naming rights to our bridges? So instead of naming the bridge after Mario Cuomo, name it after Verizon or Sprint or T-Mobile.
Yeah,
have them pay for it. And all of a sudden now that spending goes away. In fact, some revenue comes in from them. And now when we get rid of a tax, that's how the tax
isn't
is
that kind of something
for.
Similar when they do like the states do sponsor a highway where they
absolutely
have people.
You know, it makes complete sense because you think about all the presence that IBM and GE have upstate. Why wouldn't they sponsor one of the big bridges?
Absolutely.
I mean,
100%. But not just that, it's free advertising.
Yeah.
You remember in New York City, just to be clear, New York City has 8.5 million people plus at least 3 to 4 million people that come into the city every single day.
Right.
Yeah.
So every single morning, on multiple dozens of media outlets, people say things like, the George Washington Bridge is packed today.
Yeah, exactly.
Imagine if it was, the Sprint Bridge is packed today. And Sprint gets talked about, times every hour.
I think
on
that's
a,
an excellent
a dozen,
idea. I don't know why I've never heard that.
It's an excellent idea. I can see Sprint being a metaphor for being fast. They might not want to sponsor traffic on the GW Bridge.
Or maybe they might want to make it a better bridge so there's less traffic.
Yeah. I mean, that would certainly work too.
Yes.
So, quick thing. At this point in time, it seems to me like you're talking about things that nobody else is talking about.
That's true.
I want to know how people can help you get that message across the state, because New York's a pretty big state.
Yes. LarrySharp with an E.com. LarrySharp.com. That is the most important place to go. You can go to Facebook page if you want to, Larry Sharp for New York.
All right.
I need volunteers. I need cash. And I need people to spread the word. Tell people I'm running. Just tell people you know. People say all the time, Larry, I live in New York. So what? You know people who do.
Yeah.
Tell people who live in New York I'm running. It's not going to make them vote for me. They're not going to hear about me and go, oh, my God, that guy, I'm going to vote for him.
Right.
Of course not. But if they hear from me now, then they see an ad, then they see me someplace, then they see someone else talk about me, then they might vote for me. And that's the issue. Remember, I've got 175,000 people right now in my base. That's the Johnson Well people from 2016.
Sure.
That's what I was going to ask you is, how has the Libertarian Party itself been helping you with your campaign? Has there been much effort?
I never even ask for help. It's not what I do. You know, I want to be the example to other candidates.
Right.
We don't want to wait for the party to help. We want to go out there and do it ourselves.
And
so I do it ourselves.
I think the nature of your campaign is that it brings people in automatically who want to help you. So we're going to put that on our website, www.LarrySharpWithAnE.com. We're going to keep talking about you. But I think the critical thing is that for all our listeners in New York, Larry is not even visible outside of the city where, you know, he has this great following. And so for people to start talking about him in casual conversations, you know, a lot of times we say, oh, don't talk politics. People should talk politics if they want to make things get better. And if they mention the Sharp campaign, things are going to get better.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
Larry, I want to thank you so much for calling in. It's been a real pleasure. I appreciate your leadership in the Liberty Movement, but especially appreciate the fact that you are really throwing a monkey wrench into the system in New York, and you're not doing it for power. You're doing it to make it better.
Absolutely. So, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks very much, and we will be back after this break. Well, that was a lot to digest. An exciting candidate in New York City, exciting candidate in New York. The Liberty Movement is bigger than just where you happen to be. A lot of it has to be with finding people who get the message out. Larry's saying things that that nobody else is. www.LarrySharpWithAnE.com. So we got a few minutes at the end of the show. We were talking about the tax plan. Heather, you wanted to talk a little bit about Bitcoin, right?
Well, yeah, because I just think it's crazy, the price of it lately. I mean, I know there's a lot of people in some of the social circles that I'm affiliated with that have been just nonstop talking about Bitcoin.
Well, went over 11,000.
It is.
Then it kind of plummeted back down.
And now it's actually back up. It's back up over 11,000 right now. The actual current price of a Bitcoin is $11,087.48.
So let me ask you this. Do you know anybody who's actually made a lot of money from Bitcoin?
I mean, we've had callers call into Free Talk Live, you know, saying that they invested in it years ago. And
you know,
really
I hear that, but I don't see, because, I mean, honestly, right, if you'd invested at 7, right, 7 is where it was in 2012, so that's 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
If you'd invested at 7 and you had held on to it, you'd be done.
Because
right?
The FBI made a ton of money.
$10 million. Well, that's a great point. So, right, what happened with that?
Okay, so
tell us the Ross Ulbricht story.
Ross Ulbricht,
known as the Dread Pirate Roberts.
Yes, was arrested back in 2013 and charged with, like, money laundering, hacking. And,
he ran a website called The Silk Road.
Yes, was trafficking narcotics, and he was using
Bitcoin.
Yep. And so the FBI seized his Bitcoin wallet, which at the time had 144,000 Bitcoin in it. And so
144,000 now.
This is back in 2013. So the street
times 10,000.
Yeah, times 10,000 today is about $1.5 billion. But at the time, it was only $150,000.
So what if the FBI decided to sell each Bitcoin for a dollar?
Well, that's the interesting.
Well, they couldn't sell it for a dollar.
They can't.
Why couldn't they?
How could they sell it? Nobody would buy it.
What do you mean?
I mean, essentially,
sells drugs. They have informants.
Why? If someone wanted to buy something, so I can't sell you a Bitcoin for whatever price I want to set it at.
Well, so you can. It's true.
Yeah. But the FBI has 100,000 of them, and they decided to sell all of them.
The largest Bitcoin wallet in existence belongs to the FBI. That's a fact.
Well, remember too that there's the big theft out of Mt. Gox, but There's an interesting point in that. So Bitcoin works kind of like a stock exchange, right? So there are these people who are called the market makers. And essentially, they honor every buy and every sell order. So you can directly sell Bitcoin to somebody. So if you wanted to sell it for $1, somebody would be happy to do that.
Also, if they just wanted to sell the entire wallet or something.
Right. But in general, if you wanted to do that, if you wanted to make a large-scale purchase like that, you would. It's in the same way that you would have to sell stock. You would probably go through a broker just because they're the only people who deal in that quantity.
But I mean, to me, this doesn't matter because this was something they seized. This is similar to seizing a house or seizing some other property.
Well, it's an interesting question. Did they hang on to it? Is an interesting question. And we don't know that because we don't know where it is. But if they did, it's worth a tremendous amount of money right now. If they destroyed it.
$1.5
billion. That's pretty crazy. But hey, who knows?
It could be sponsoring
U.S. operations overseas or something like that.
So now I don't know too much about like how the whole blockchain technology and stuff like that works. But I have been doing a lot of reading on Bitcoin lately.
Good thing we started the conversation now then.
And I've just... Yep. So a bunch of people were talking about how like a bunch of developers and stuff think it's going to be like this big thing. And I'm like, what developers? And nobody could really give me any names. So some of the leading people in technology, Bill Gates, for one, I started doing some research on all these different people and what their opinions were on it. And even he seems to praise the technology itself, but not the...
Well, if you dig more into Ethereum is more organized.
There?
No. It's funny. But... No, Ethereum has backing from like the big banks, Lloyds, Barclays.
Exactly. And that's what Chase. I feel Bitcoin is only doing so well right now because of the insane profits it's returning. But once that reaches a tipping point, then it would longer be.
You're arguing that there's a bubble. And I would agree that there may be a bubble. But I also said that at 1,000. So,
well, I mean, it's going to be a big bubble, you know what I mean? Because it's not just limited to one country, it's a universal thing
right now. But the thing is that it's really working, right? Bitcoin is being used more widely than any other digital currency.
Yeah.
And specifically, it's being used in Venezuela right now where the currency has collapsed. And so because socialism just doesn't work, the government has collapsed in Venezuela. And so now if you want to take a taxi ride in Venezuela, the guy wants to be paid in Bitcoin. If you want to, there's famine going on in Venezuela, but if you can pay in Bitcoin, there's food because people don't honor the currency anymore. And that's the real value of it. And what makes it work for people in Venezuela is that they can change it for U.S. dollars in U.S. banks.
I think my theory is the technology is going to transfer into something else that the government's going to end up regulating.
Well, I hope not, but it might. I mean, there's an interesting question because the government likes to oversee financial transactions and... If you try to deposit the results of your sales of Bitcoin into your bank, the government would know about it. On the other hand, there are all these Bitcoin ATMs all over the place.
You're supposed to pay capital gains tax on anything that you make off the Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Which makes total sense because it's like
a form of barter.
Yeah.
Right?
No, it's income.
Exactly right. Yeah. However, all that's going to have to wait until next week. But until then, I would say go out and buy at least a little bit of Bitcoin. We'll see you guys next weekend.
Good night, Skippy.
People talk about sin taxes. The government taxes cigarettes because it says smoking is bad, and they want less people to smoke. The government taxes alcohol because it says drinking is bad, and they want less people to drink. So why is the government taxing income? Join that discussion and lots more, and listen live to Liberty on the Air with your host, Dan Fishman, every Saturday night at 11 p.m. right here on The Voice of Boston, AM 680, WRKO.